Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Do you have a hunger for cinematic horror?
Do you enjoy the thrill from seeing boogeymen, beasts, and butchers go about their dark work?
Then all you need to do is speak of the devil, and the devil will come to you.
Speak of the Devil is a podcast for all movies that have anything from demons and poltergeists to serial killers and the supernatural.
I'm Kayla.
And I'm Taylor.
Join us as we embark on a journey through the dark recesses of horror films, from the classics to blockbusters and everything in between.
New episodes come out every Wednesday wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're not scared of anything.
Are you?
Curfew is in full effect. Everyone lock your doors and don't answer after midnight. Early on Wednesday episodes are about to be released.
Tell us about your encounters with Early on Wednesday.
Ladies, this is Natasha with Cryptids, Creeps, and Conspiracy. You guys are great. I mean, you're funny. You're very interactive with people, both on the pod and through social media. And your guys' detail in your episodes is great.
I think it's pretty awesome.
Stacey and Lavender keep you very engaged in the topic.
And you guys make me laugh throughout my day when I'm having a crappy day.
You heard it here first. Stay safe out there, ghouls.
Alrighty, Mom. What story do you have for us today?
Well, you should tell me what story you have first because I have the drink.
Okay.
Good point, right?
I'm going to be talking I'm going to be talking about Walter Jackson Freeman.
I don't know if I know that name.
He's not a good guy. Just
okay.
That's all you need to know about it right now.
Okay. I am going to be telling you about a spooky story that happened over in England a few decades ago. So, to go with my story, the drink that I brought is called Holy Water. I don't know if you can hear that. There's a lot of stomping above my head. Did you hear that? Okay. So, the Holy Water drink is made of 1 ounce of rum, 1 ounce of vodka, half an ounce of blue curacao, half an ounce of peach schnapps, 4 ounces of lemonade, and then pineapple juice. The steps are to fill a large glass with crushed ice and strawberry slices, to then add to the glass vodka and rum and peach schnapps and lemonade, then add a blue curacao to the top and top with a splash of pineapple juice. And then if you have strawberries to garnish, and I intended to buy strawberries but then forgot, so mine is lacking the strawberries. But I don't know that they would have added much in flavor, so.
I don't think so. Usually you need like strawberry syrup or something like that.
Or muddle them really well and then shake it all together kind of thing. So, all right. We're going to take this blue and slightly...
It looks nice.
It does. It's pretty. All right. Let's taste it. Okay.
That's pretty sweet.
It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. I really thought this was going to be gross because yeah, there's so much different flavors and alcohol in it. You know, with curacao and peach and lemon and pineapple and but it's actually not too bad.
I can see it giving me a gnarly hangover though.
Very likely. Yes, because there's so many different things mixed into it. Yeah. But it doesn't taste horrible.
Not at all.
I don't know that I would recommend it necessarily, but...
No, I wouldn't order it again, but...
No.
I'd drink it. That's fine.
Okay. So to go with this drink, the story, because it's holy water, I am going to be talking about a poltergeist situation. And although holy water wasn't used in this particular story, it has been told in other stories where poltergeists are involved that holy water plays a part. But I didn't see anything where there was investigations, but I don't know that there was like a purification or anything involved with this particular one. I think the incidents just kind of died down after a while. So this occurred in Enfield, which is a suburb outside of London, England. In 1977, a family of five was terrorized by an unseen entity in a suburb of London, England. In the home were single mother Peggy Hodgson and her four children. Two of the daughters, Janet, who was 11, and 13-year-old Margaret had scary experiences. The girls reported hearing furniture shaking and knocking sounds coming from inside the walls and under the floors, which in and of itself would be really uncomfortable. Freaky. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear anything from inside the walls. Definitely not from under the floorboards.
But it depends on what I heard, because I'd probably just assume there were like rats or something in the walls.
Which is just as terrifying in my opinion. If you heard a scratching or something,
the walls, then as long as they're not in the house.
Well, the walls are in the house.
I know. As long
there's
as I
a
can't
little
see
crack,
them,
they're going to get out. No, I'm not playing with rodents in my walls. Because for me, what I think is there's electrical cords in there and rats are bored, like dogs are bored. And they're going to chew that shit up.
Smell smoke coming from the walls one day.
Exactly. And my house is going to burn down because there was a friggin' rat in there.
Rat electrocuted himself.
Well, that would actually be kind of funny, but sorry, everyone who loves rats. Not a rat fan. Several members of the family witnessed furniture moving around without human intervention. Disturbed by what was happening, single mother Peggy Hodgson asked neighbors if they knew what could be causing the eerie sounds. You know, she's like, something's going on. Have you guys heard anything? Did you guys make the sounds? But the neighbors were just as confused as Peggy. So Peggy called the police because she thought maybe there was a burglar in the house, which makes sense. I mean, if you're hearing something, you'd think maybe somebody got in. Police arrived to determine what could be causing the sounds, and one of the officers was shocked when a chair hovered about half an inch above the floor and then moved across the room about 4 feet all by itself.
That's freaky.
That's super freaky. I don't want furniture moving around without a person doing it. I don't want furniture moving by itself. But the police could not determine what was causing the strange knocking sounds. The next step was to call in paranormal investigators. Journalists were also invited to come and help document the events. Over the next year and a half, researchers from the Society of Psychical Research, as well as demonologists, psychologists, magicians, and reporters visited the family in their home. On several occasions, strange things were seen, heard, and documented. Video cameras, still photo cameras, and sound recording devices were set up in the home. People reported seeing toys flying across the room, as well as furniture moving around. One journalist was even struck in the face with a Lego block, which left a mark above his eye for several days.
God, that sucks. Those are sharp too.
It is. And, you know, there's a joke about how it's awful to step on a Lego block in bare feet, which 100% that's true.
Yeah.
I've never been hit in the eye with a Lego, and I don't think I need to.
I wouldn't hurt that bad. They're fairly light. If it was like a whole fully built Lego piece, like a Lego plane or something, that might hurt a lot more.
That's true.
That'd be pretty funny too, because it'd break into pieces.
But then you also have to think, like, how much force, because you, like you said, a Lego block is very lightweight. How much force did that Lego fly across the room to leave a mark near the guy's eye for days? That sucker was traveling fast.
Yeah, that's not like someone flicking a Lego block at you.
No. The flying toys were hot to the touch as well, which super creepy. And paranormal researchers noted that that's a pretty common occurrence with poltergeist activity. So if something is moving around on its own and you touch it, it's really common for it to be hot. Pictures were taken of Janet levitating. The knocking sounds continued and seemed to move around the room, first noticeably coming from one side of the room, then from the other side. The sounds would also fade in and out, getting louder and then quieter, and then increasing in volume again. It was not bad enough there's a knocking sound, but now it's changing its volume and it's moving around, and I don't think I'm down for any of that.
No, thank you.
One paranormal researcher reported seeing furniture floating and then tipping over, as well as other furniture. Some of it would spin in place and then fall over. So it's spinning, it's levitating, it's flipping over. It's just moving in general. Again, not down for that. He saw coins drop to the ground from thin air. So all of a sudden, a coin materializes and then falls to the ground. He saw stones flying over the house and dogs barking in a room where there were no dogs.
That would be scary.
It would
thinking
be.
A giant fucking Doberman's in your house.
Yeah. One particularly scary event occurred when one of the daughters cried that something was holding her leg and she couldn't move. Two men grabbed the girl's arms and pulled, but were unable to move her from the spot. Janet reported that she would often be thrown from her bed in the night, and she was seen by other family members to go into trances on occasion. Researchers wanted to test what would happen if the room was empty so that there was nothing to be thrown around, and they soon heard a loud sound in the room. And when they went in to see what the sound was, a iron fireplace had been pulled out of the wall.
What?
Janet was, yeah, an iron fireplace. So
like built into the wall, or like a little furnace?
I don't know. It just said an iron fireplace. So I'm guessing like
probably like a little furnace.
Could be.
Like one, like a wood stove in like a smaller house.
Maybe.
That's all I'm imagining.
I don't know. I'm thinking of like.
A brick fireplace would be the one with a chimney through the roof and stuff like that.
Yeah, but European homes have like those little tiny fireplaces in the wall And then there's like a, you know, kind of a smaller tile surround in front of it and things like that. I don't know. It was an iron fireplace, it said. I wouldn't be down for that either. I'm not down for any of this, to be honest. Janet was often heard to speak in a gruff, deep voice as if being possessed by someone or something. Although there are witnesses to many of the events, there are, of course, skeptics who say the entire thing was just a fanciful set of lies conjured up by children. One researcher said that the stories were overrated and the girls' behavior was suspicious. Remember that I mentioned cameras were left in some of the rooms? Well, the girls didn't always know that they were there. And Janet was seen physically bending a spoon to fool the researchers. So
that's funny.
On another occasion, there was a camera set up to take pictures at specific time intervals, and there was a picture of Janet up in the air, which some claim is proof of her levitating. However, skeptics point out that she is right near the edge of her bed, and she could have just been jumping on the bed and using it like a trampoline. I'll post.
Yeah, that seems more likely.
There are a bunch of pictures of her in the quote unquote levitation, and I'll post them on our Instagram. I think pretty much most people, even if they were firm believers in the whole levitation and poltergeist things and everything, would look at that and go, yeah, she's jumping on the friggin' bed. She's jumping on the bed. But I don't know. According to the researchers, she was levitating, not jumping on the bed. Some skeptics believe that the gruff voice during her periods of possession was either ventriloquism or vocal tricks used by the girl. The argument for this being that the speech pattern used during those times of reported possession was age appropriate for a child and similar to Janet's normal speech pattern. So she's using phrasing and terminology that a child would use, not potentially an 80-year-old man who, you know, has lived a life and passed on and is now possessing her. So there's definitely different. Figure. Yeah.
Okay, great.
In one interview with the girls, they were asked about the haunting, you know, like what's it like being in a haunted house kind of thing and being haunted. And Janet said, it's not haunted. And her sister told her to be quiet. She was like, shh, 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 shh. Stop saying that. At the time, the girls admitted that some of the events were actually pranks. And Janet's reason when interviewed as an adult was that they would fake some of the events because when nothing happened in front of the researchers, they feel like they failed. So they were like, all these people are here in our house and nothing's happening, so let's make it look like something's happening. And so they would just make shit up. However, she claims that that was only occasionally, and she estimated that it only happened about 2% of the time that the events were faked. Even some of the witness accounts have changed over time. Remember I mentioned that there was a police officer who saw the chair move across the room. We talked about how it levitated and then slid 4 feet. In one interview, she said she believed it was faked by the children, but then in another interview, she thought it was real. So, and it's not like it sounded like on a timeline, she said it's fake and it's real, but I don't know. So at one point she thought it was fake and then another point she thought it was real. So who knows? Whether or not mass society believes that a poltergeist was in the home, the story has inspired several pop culture events, including a play, multiple documentaries, as well as a mockumentary, and a dramatic adaptations with probably the most popular of those being the movie The Conjuring 2 was based on this story. So,
really?
Yeah.
Apparently,
which I've never seen, so I don't know.
I've seen a couple of Conjurings. I don't remember which one is which. I don't really care either, but
right.
Apparently those people, like, again, I don't remember which one, but there's like this couple.
The Warrens?
And yeah, and those are real people.
Yeah.
I don't know if we talked about them before.
We have not, but I've listened to a couple podcasts where they talked about them specifically, and they had like a really weird dynamic, and there was a whole lot of speculation about whether or not one of them had any paranormal powers and the other one didn't. And there's just a lot of rumors about that couple and some of the investigations they did, and outside of that, other shit being weird and funky. And so I don't know.
Alrighty, let's talk about this Walter Freeman. Walter Freeman was born on November 14th, 1895, and raised in Philadelphia.
Well, this is an old story.
Freeman excelled at... he was an older guy, but yeah, it takes place around in the 30s and on. But Freeman excelled at school, and after graduating high school, he attended Yale University beginning in 1912 and graduated about 4 years later. He then went on to study neurology at the University of Philadelphia Medical School. By the 1930s, Walter had a PhD in neuropathology. He got a job as the head on the neurology department at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. On November 12, 1935, a new neurosurgery procedure was performed in Portugal under the direction of neurologist and physician Egas Moniz.
Oh.
Any guesses on what this was?
I do have a guess, and I'm going to say
it's not a good one, I'm guessing. Close. This procedure was called a leucotomy.
Ooh.
It was invented to treat mental illness by taking small parts of the patient's frontal lobe out. So very similar to a lobotomy.
Okay.
This
so
is like
do you
the
know
first
which
version of it
came first? Okay, so this is first.
Yeah, the leucotomy was the first one, and I'll get into that.
Okay.
Yeah. So when Freeman got word of this new treatment, he immediately began to study under Moniz. Since Walter wasn't a neurosurgeon, his idea of the process was a little different, which eventually led to the treatment known as the transorbital lobotomy. So the leucotomy was an actual procedure, and this guy who wasn't a surgeon at all was like, I know how the brain works, and it would work this way too. So we just kind of came up with a bootleg version of it.
The teeny
so
version.
So a lobotomy, yes, exactly. Great value. A lobotomy uses a tool called an orbitoclast, which looks similar to an ice pick. Yeah. It's a long, pointy piece of metal with like a little handle at the bottom. The orbitoclast is placed under the eyelid against the top of the eye socket. Yeah.
You're making me very
uncomfortable.
Just
a warning, if you're squeamish now, this Ugh. It's not going to get better.
Dude, okay.
The orbitoclast, huh?
I have, you know that I have so much, I have so many issues with eye things. And, okay, I'm going to try really hard not to gag and throw up. But I promise if I do, I will mute my mic, because...
Okay. You can keep it rolling. Ready. It might be good entertainment value.
We'll just name the episode the one where Jane throws up.
So, after the orbitoclast is placed against the top of the eye socket, it is then hit with a mallet, causing it to break through the bone, severing the connection between the frontal lobes and the thalamus by raking the tool around in the frontal lobe.
Oh.
So they get it. Once they get it inside the brain, he's just like making scrambled eggs in there. hoping to hit the right thing. He can't see what he's doing in there. He's just hoping for the best. Yeah.
God.
Not good. Not good.
No, it's not.
This was done, this was done almost exclusively without anesthesia, but instead used electroconvulsive therapy. And if you don't know what that is, they shock you until you go into a seizure and go unconscious.
And then they scramble your brain.
Yeah. God damn.
No, I mean, it's not bad. Oh, it's not bad enough that they're doing this shit anyway, but without anesthesia?
Yeah. Yeah. Super fucked up.
Good God. Okay.
So Walter enlisted the help of neurosurgeon James Watts to help him complete his first ever lobotomy. Since he wasn't a surgeon, he was like, I'm going to have a surgeon help me out with this. He just kind of developed the process.
Right.
He just hadn't tried it out yet. On September 14th, 1963, Alice Hammett sat at the procedure table in hopes of relieving her depression, insomnia, and anxiety. By 1942, the two had completed over 200 lobotomies. So just over 10 years, they completed 200 of these.
Okay, you said 63.
Mm-hmm.
When you said the first woman.
In 1942. Yeah. So a little less than 10 years.
No, you said 63. You said 1963. And I was...
Or 36. Sorry.
Okay. I was like... I was thinking... I thought that lobotomies had been around longer than that. I thought it was longer.
No, 1936.
Okay,
so, sorry.
36. Okay. Whew.
Yeah.
I got worried there for a second that I was...
So the two made claims that out of all their procedures, 63% of patients had improved, 23% were reported to be unchanged, and 14% were worse after surgery. But the reality is that this procedure turned a majority of patients into vegetables.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no way that those statistics are accurate.
It's, you can't do that much damage to the brain and not be fucked up afterwards.
Right. Ugh. No way.
Yeah. James Watts, Walter's partner, ended up leaving Walter because he didn't agree with the morality of the procedure. Because he could see, like, this is just fucking people up. It's not doing anything positive.
Yeah. No shit.
Yeah. Since the procedure didn't use anesthesia, it could be performed almost anywhere. And since Walter had a portable electroshock machine. Yeah.
Oh.
So Walter just traveled around the country to various mental institutions to perform lobotomies and teach staff about how to perform this procedure on patients. And
back alley
while
lobotomy.
I was doing my research, while I was doing my research, I found a rumor. It turned out, like, there's no evidence that anyone actually called it this, but there's a rumor that Walter called his van the lobotomobile.
I hate to laugh at that because it has so turned funny. My stomach. It's so fucked up. But that lobotomobile. Oh my God. That's
a good name.
Oh.
So Walter's name gained huge notoriety after he performed a lobotomy on Rosemary Kennedy, who is JFK's sister.
Oh, yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Before the procedure, she suffered from mood swings and seizures. After the procedure, Rosemary was unable to walk and talk except for a few words.
Oh,
so that's kind of just an example of how much damage it can do. She was a fully functioning human being, and then she got
some mood disorders.
She just got messed up from it.
Now, in this day and age, that guy would not survive that past 6 months before he had a tragic accident in which it was ruled a suicide.
He was hit by four cars all at once from each side.
Right. And that was a suicide.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
So in 1967, Freeman performed a lobotomy on Helen Mortensen. This was Helen's third lobotomy. Everything was going according to plan. However, shortly after the procedure, Helen passed away due to cerebral hemorrhage in her frontal lobe. Who would have thought?
Duh.
Yeah.
Shocker.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
However, she wasn't the first patient killed by Walter.
No.
In fact, a patient at the Cherokee Mental Health Institute died mid-lobotomy when Walter stopped to take a photo in the middle of his procedure. This caused the orbitoclast to over-penetrate his brain.
I'm so grossed out. Oh, this is so uncomfortable.
So after Helen's death, Walter was banned from ever performing another lobotomy. From 1936 to 1967, Walter had performed over 4,000 lobotomies in 23 states, with around 400 of his patients passing away from the procedure.
Holy shit.
Yeah. To make things worse, he lobotomized 19 minors, the young of which was 4 years old.
What?
Yeah. Help, my baby's crying too much. Shove an ice pick in his brain. Make it scrambled eggs.
Oh, my Christ.
Oh, fucking worst parent of the year award.
No shit. What did that kid do?
Help, my kid, he's throwing rocks at windows and we can't stop him. Something stupid like that, I bet.
Jesus Christ.
57 years old, Freeman retired from his position at George Washington University and opened up a modest practice in California. Freeman died of complications arising from an operation for cancer on May 31st, 1972. And that's the story of Walter Freeman.
You know what's really fucked up about that story? And I don't know if you found this in your research. I believe he won a Nobel Peace Prize for that procedure when it was first invented. When he first invented it, he got a Nobel
Peace Prize.
And maybe in retrospect, it was taken away from him. I don't know. But I remember in psychology class 1.5 years ago when I was in college that we talked about lobotomies. And I swear that there was a Nobel Prize associated with it.
So, no, Walter Freeman nominated his mentor, Egeus Moniz, so the guy who created the leucotomy got a Nobel Peace Prize, or was nominated, okay. I should say. Oh, he did win it. Okay, so yeah, Moniz won it in 1949.
Okay.
So, I mean, that
either
one
way, not great.
Sounded like it had actual, like, basis, and it's still taking part of your brain out, but it's not just
right.
This seems good.
Yeah,
I'll stop here.
Right, let's just random. Like, how do you decide how long you scramble that ice pick for? What angle? And it's just gross.
So you marked four out of the 15 different symptoms. We're gonna only scramble your brain for 4 seconds.
Right.
Yeah.
How does anybody? Three times? She had it done three times.
Yeah. Fucking Molly.
That's an understatement.
Yeah. Gross.
I need a chaser. Do you have a good chaser that will make me not want to throw up in my mouth?
My chaser is an Instagram account. It's The Shay Spence. And he makes like a bunch of different like food recipes and drink recipes and stuff like that that are like super easy. He makes a lot of like just pour this stuff in a pot and throw it in the oven and now you have this pasta. Stuff like that. It's
nice and easy stuff.
Yeah, a bunch of like super, and it's like fairly healthy stuff.
Oh, I mean,
it makes
cool.
A lot of pasta, but if you use the right noodles, then it's not that bad.
I'll have to check it out. I'm always looking for new recipes. My chaser, I think you're going to really get excited about this chaser. Someone that lives here in town that I was talking to the other day said she saw a UFO.
Oh.
Yeah. And it was the middle of the day. It was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, or no, it was about one in the afternoon. So full daylight, sunny, blue skies. She described it as triangular shape with three, well, if it had been dark, would have looked like lights. And one of them like moved away, and then the others two disappeared. She didn't see them move away, but they were no longer there.
Weird.
So she said if they moved away, they moved away really fast. But yeah.
Sounds like UFO.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool. It was funny because she asked me, have you ever seen a UFO? And I was like, no, but I'd like to. And she's like, I just did. So it's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I enjoyed hearing that poltergeist story. And if you're listening this far, I have another haunting that took place in England for next week's episode. So make sure to check that out.
Cool. How funny. Well, can't wait to hear that.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. Love you, Mom.
Thanks, everybody. Chat with you later.
Bye.
Love you.
Love you too.
Hey friends, thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.